T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Tuning in on a Sunday night as we morph into a Monday morning. I know a lot of people have Monday off as a holiday, an extension of Veterans Day. And actually, I'm really excited because I'm doing my first TV game with Columbia Women's Basketball on Monday, and their opponent is Army. So I feel like that'll be really neat to wrap up the Veterans Day weekend. And I'm sure that that having Army in the house, there will be an extra special tribute. And so I'm looking forward to that. It'll be my first game that I've done with a team from West Point in quite a while. And so, that'll be neat. But that's Monday evening, and we still have a lot of football to talk about between now and then. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio from inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. I appreciate how many of you in the last hour either retweeted me or sent your own tweets with the hashtag salute to service. We can keep that going. The NFL is donating $25 to its military nonprofit partners every time you do that. So it's totally worth it. If you're looking for something to retweet, I pinned one of my tweets to the top of my Twitter page, A Law Radio, so you can find it. And on Facebook, there's a message for you veterans as well that's pinned to the top of that page. We're also asking you, as you look around the NFL, where do you feel like coaching changes are necessary? Either immediately or in the very near future. Where do you feel like they need a reset? And no, I'm not going to take you seriously if you say Mike Tomlin. Every year that I do this job, I hear people call for Mike Tomlin's firing. It's ridiculous. And I don't think Mike McCarthy needs to be fired in Green Bay either. They just went through all these changes, and it's obviously had an effect on the team, not to mention the injuries that they've had. But if you continue to change things, well, you understand the negative downward spiral that it sets your team on. You cannot constantly be turning things over. So as much as people want changes in Dallas, I appreciate that Jerry Jones has wanted to stay committed to one head coach and trying to establish a system with what is a relatively new quarterback. Coming into this year, having no receivers, essentially, or no number one wide receiver, and missing a Hall of Fame tight end. And so you can only change so much every season. And a lot of times it's players and it's personnel. You go changing coaches and schemes and systems and terminology and philosophies every year, and you go absolutely nowhere. You spin your wheels. And so I understand why owners are more committed to sticking with coaches sometimes and looking at all the transition around them and thinking more change, a turnstile of changes, is not going to help the team any. But certainly, if you don't win and there's an extended pattern of not winning, then yes, eventually there needs to be a change. You can only change so much of your personnel. You could certainly cut guys, but you're also going to be on the hook for a lot of salaries if you just go slashing with a big paper cutter. And so you got to be careful what you do there. Coaches tend to be fall guys, but sometimes it works. You bring in a fresh voice. Think about some of the first-time head coaches in the NFL who are having success right now. The Tennessee Titans under Mike Vrabel, they're 5-4, and they're only a game back in the AFC South. But I would say in that same division, think about the Houston Texans. They have stuck with Bill O'Brien. As bad as it's been, at times they've stuck with O'Brien through a lot of injuries, a lot of transition on both the offensive and defensive sides of the ball. They stuck with him, and now they are 6-3 after starting out 0-3. And so change just for the sake of change is not a good idea. But I do recognize in some places it might be time for a change. Where do you think that change is overdue? Again, on Twitter, A Law Radio, or on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're going to get to some of your calls this hour. In fact, very soon, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. In the NFC West, The Los Angeles Rams recovered nicely from that loss to the New Orleans Saints. But this one was a nice back and forth battle, as it should be, against a team with as much experience as the Seattle Seahawks, a team that has got a lot of playoff experience in recent years, as much as they've had transition as well. They still have leaders and coaches who've been through the ringer, and I appreciate the fact that they've not given up on this season as much as it's been a grind the entire time. And you knew they were going to give a fight to the Rams. In Los Angeles, both teams were putting up offensive numbers. Actually, if you look at the box score, look at the team stats, they both had success. How about this? Seattle finished with 273 yards rushing. What? Think about that. There are some teams, you know, I have to go back and check how many yards the Jets had total, but I'm pretty sure that there are two or three teams this weekend that did not have 273 total yards. Tampa Bay might be one of them. And the Seahawks had 273 yards rushing. Rashad Penny was over 100 yards. And how about Russell Wilson? He had nearly 100 yards himself. But you also had great success for the Jared Goff, Todd Gurley Rams. So Gurley was over 120 yards. Brandon Cooks was over 100 yards. Goff had two touchdowns and was over 300 yards. So yeah, there are a lot more points than maybe you would expect in a game with the Seahawks. But of course, their defense is different this year. 67 total points. And they went back and forth. Seattle led more than once, including early in the second half. And so you've got a couple of major plays that you can look at that were turning points. And one of them happened about midway through that fourth quarter. Ooh, you just knew this was going to be critical.
Five wide for Russell Wilson. He's alone in the shotgun. Here comes the Coliseum crowd. Can the Rams defense get off the field? Four-man rush. Wilson feeling the heat. Strip sack. Ball down at the 20. Still loose at the 15. The Rams fall on it at the 10. 6 minutes to go in regulation. Goff under center. Jet sweep. Right side. Brandon Cooks to the end zone. Touchdown, LA! 35-24 on the first play after the turnover.
So the Rams get this massive strip sack of Russell Wilson. Do you know who was in the middle of it all? Dante Fowler. Dante Fowler's the guy who recovered that ball. And then one play later, the Rams score again to put them up by two touchdowns. So that was the deal. That was the turning point. Now, they also held off Seattle on their final drive, so they stopped them on downs to make sure that the Seahawks weren't going to force overtime, anything crazy might happen. But yeah, the Rams edging the Seahawks, and so next week, if I'm not mistaken, let me quick look at the schedule just to make sure I've got my days right. But next week, based on what Seattle does in their Week 11 game, before the Rams ever get on the field to take on the Chiefs. All right, let's look at our Week 11 schedule. Before the Rams ever get on the field to battle the Chiefs. Now remember, that's Monday Night Football. It's in Mexico City. Estadio Azteca. You've got the Seattle Seahawks playing Thursday night against Green Bay. Oof. Green Bay is running through a gauntlet right now. So let's just say, for sake of argument, the Packers win in Seattle. It's a tall order, but let's say they do. That means that even before the Rams would land in Mexico City, they would already have clinched the NFC West. Yowzers. They're the only team in that division that's above 500. And with Seattle falling below 500, you're talking about a really large gap. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Really impressive to see how Dante Fowler has fit in. Now, I know no one's looking at what the Rams did up front and thinking, oh, that was a great game, especially considering that they gave up nearly 300 yards rushing. But Russell Wilson's a load. They all know it. And they still ended up coming away with that huge fumble recovery in the fourth.
Russell, he's a dynamic player and can extend plays and make really big plays if you don't keep him in a pocket. He's really good on his feet. So we just knew we had to buckle down in the fourth quarter, to close the inside of the pocket.
They did do that. They were able to keep the Seahawks at bay and to come up with that huge takeaway when they needed it. As for the Seahawks, you can understand why this is even more frustrating for them. There are certainly some young guys that are playing on that roster. But the guys who've been there, the guys who stuck with this team and were there with them going back to their Super Bowl seasons, they understand what the standard is for the Seahawks. And so for them, this is demoralizing because they feel like they're so close and they just aren't able to put together a win streak.
I'm not the moral victories guy, so loss is a loss. And we need to grow from it. It's only good if we learn something from it and do better. And so we got to do that. We got to apply that to the rest of the season.
Bobby Wagner is still a wrecking ball. He did his part. 10 solo tackles, 13 total, plus he hit the quarterback as well. So this was a really entertaining football game between the Rams and the Seahawks, but Los Angeles moves to 9-1. While we're talking about teams in the LA area, maybe sometimes you forget that that's where the Chargers reside. There are times when I still want to call them the San Diego Chargers, but they have got a really incredible formula right now. It's working. I know they're playing against largely teams that are below 500. But what did Jay Gruden say earlier on Sunday, the coach of the Redskins? I don't think there's any such thing as an ugly win. And you know what? That applies to the Chargers as well. And let's be honest, even though they're taking on teams that have losing records like the Oakland Raiders on Sunday, fact is they're not playing ugly football. Phillip Rivers is having one of the best seasons of his career. And Melvin Gordon would probably be getting more MVP chatter or more just talk about him in general, if not for the fact that Todd Gurley is killing it at that position. But to have a guy like Melvin Gordon, who's so versatile, it's a major weapon for Rivers.
And they'll bring the house. Rivers throws to Gordon on the screen. One man to miss, and of course he makes a miss. 40, 45, midfield 50, 40. No one in front of him. Flash to the finish line. Touchdown, Chargers. 66 yards to pay dirt, Melvin Gordon.
And there's a lot of teams that are going to be in the hunt down the stretch. We just got to keep resetting each week, as Coach Lynn says, reset and go again. And that's what we'll do as another division opponent comes to our place next week.
So Melvin Gordon has 93 yards on the ground, has that 66-yard touchdown reception. He didn't have to high hurdle anyone, but it was still pretty impressive. And so he is a stats machine, and it just makes everything in the offense open up. I mean, same effect that James Conner has or a Todd Gurley has. Any quality running back who can hurt you a variety of ways keeps a defense honest. Now, for Oakland, they did have a fair number of yards, but there was also a lot of pressure on Derek Carr. Again, the offensive line in front of him is rough. So he got sacked 4 times. And in addition to that, got hit 9 more times. So 4 official sacks and 9 more quarterback hits. So they had a lot of lost yardage just because of the various hits and then the turnovers. So he didn't have any interceptions, but he did have a lost fumble. And while they did a lot of nice things, they're a one step forward, 2 steps back season. I don't want to say that's the franchise, although I know some people feel that way, but it wasn't that long ago that they were vying for a top seed in the AFC, and then Derek Carr broke his leg. This season is really frustrating, and I know people want to point to John Gruden, the moves that have been made. They're definitely in full-out rebuilding mode, but it doesn't make it any easier for the guys inside the locker room or for the coach.
Mental toughness, physical toughness, doing everything you can in the eye of adversity. And I know it sounds corny to some people, but that's the grit and the toughness that this organization was built on, and that's what we're going to continue to strive for.
He says all the right things, except that whole deal about how his phone is ringing off the hook with guys who want to come play for him. That I'm not so sure about. But, you know, maybe that was the case at some point. I understand that the moves he's made have not been popular, and the record is awful. The record and the way they've lost. They were competitive in some games at the beginning of the year. They're not right now. And to fall to 1-8 and to be 1-4 at home, I know the home is not, it's not one of those new fancy shiny homes, but it's still their home in front of their own fans as they get ready to depart to Vegas very soon. This is brutal. But I do appreciate that he brings leadership, and Derek Carr does as well. He takes all of this to heart. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Lots of you are continuing to use the hashtag salute to service, or you are retweeting anything that I put out there for football on Sunday. I just kept using the hashtag, whether or not it was a tweet about service. And so you can find me on Twitter or on Facebook. We're asking you which teams, which organizations are in desperate need of a coaching change now, or maybe at the end of the season. But either way, they're running into a brick wall. And then we're going to take your call starting next, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
The game between the Chiefs and the Cardinals actually had a bunch of history in it, not just 31 touchdown passes for Patrick Mahomes, which sets the new single season record. Think about that. He's already got the new franchise record for a single season, as you hear with Mitch Holtis on the Chiefs Radio Network, but he still has, what, six games to go? They're 9-1. He's got six games to play. I highly doubt that all of a sudden the touchdown production is going to poof, disappear. And so you have Pat Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Alvin Kamara, who did give up some offense in this game between the Chiefs and the Cardinals, but also managed to come up with some turnovers. Mahomes was sacked 5 times, which is a big deal. They got a lot of, we know Arizona's front line is pretty fierce. And Arizona finally got a really big game from David Johnson. In fact, they were close to 100 yards rushing. He was close to 100 yards rushing, but he also added 85 receiving yards. There's some things to like for the Cardinals. Larry Fitzgerald had a catch late in the game in which he became second in the NFL in all-time receiving yards. So this was a milestone game, but it was also another win for the Chiefs.
Mahomes magic!
Yeah, there's plenty of that this season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Andy Reid gets to work with this guy, with this group, week in and week out, and you can tell he's just so proud of this young man, numbers aside.
Listen, he's had a heck of a year. I mean, he's playing his heart out, and I love the backside of that, the preparation and how he goes about his business there, and day in and day out, you guys have a chance to see him at practice early, and he comes out every day, he's bringing energy, and he makes sure that he has his things in order, and when he does that, he's got a lot on his plate. As far as responsibility goes, to run the offense. So, and he takes care of that.
You know what you haven't seen much with Mahomes? He does a lot of the work, obviously, and he did watch for nearly a full season, but you don't have those growing pains much. I mean, he has this ability to escape from pressure and from what would surely seem like a sack, and then to make these incredible throws across his body, which would be ill-advised for most quarterbacks. So he definitely has the ability to make something out of nothing, but you don't see the same stupid mistakes, which are expected of young quarterbacks. And again, he only started one game as a rookie. He watched for most of the year, but he's very steady. You don't get the wild roller coaster ride with Mahomes like you do with so many other young QBs. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio, brought to you by, not brought to you by, our toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Brain and mouth, not on the same page. 855-212-4CBS. There's a quick way that you can save money, and that's by switching to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's start with a phone call in Wisconsin. Welcome Brian to the show. Brian.
Hey, Amy. How you doing?
I'm good.
Well, let's talk about my Cowboys. I'm really not impressed with them this year. Yes, they won tonight, but for 4-5, I think they should be way ahead of the curve of what they are. And I really wish that they'd get rid of their owner.
Well, that's not happening, obviously.
No, we know that. We know that. It would be nice to think that Mark Cuban could, you know, go in and swindle a deal out of Jerry Jones. I think that would be just wonderful. That's my dream. And
don't hold your breath, man.
That's true. And that's what a thought. But
even if, and I don't mean this to be morbid, but even if Jerry Jones would pass away tomorrow, I mean, he's an older guy, not old, but he's an older guy. Well, his family still has control, which is why Stephen Jones is such a huge part of it. His family and his daughter, if I'm not mistaken, works in the front office too. So it's a family business that's going to stay that way for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's what do you think they need? I mean, for a team that was projected to come out of the NFC East, to win the NFC.
Okay, I don't know who projected that. I have no idea, but that division is always a crapshoot. Always. It turns over every single year. And so I don't, and I mean, projections are just guesses. So if that's where you got your confidence from, that was probably misplaced. I will say that I think the Amari Cooper addition looks good already. It really does open things up for Cole Beasley, for Ezekiel Elliott. He is their bell cow. They need to continue to feed him, They need to continue to make him the focal point of the offense. But having an Amari Cooper who brings such a discipline to route running, have you noticed how much better he is at running those routes? They're crisp and they're precise and they're he's where he's supposed to be. And that forces everyone else to raise the bar. Now, Dak has been inconsistent, but you still see flashes of how good he can be and how efficient he can be. The defense is awesome. So I know they're below 500. I know people complain about the conservative offensive game plan. Honestly, I feel like it helped them in this particular game. And you don't need to get fancy. You just need to do what works. And they've got guys who can definitely make plays. They just have to be consistent about it.
They need a better place kicker, though. Don't you think?
I mean, Brett Maher, I know he missed tonight, but he made 16 in a row before that. Or before last week.
Yeah. And, I mean, really, have they really replaced Jason Witten, do you think?
No, of course not. I've never said that. They still have a major void. They're platooning at tight end. They've got a bunch of different guys who do a bunch of things well and not one guy who does all those things well.
Correct. But, I mean, I'm glad they beat the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles aren't, I think if I was going to predict the Super Bowl right now, I would probably say the Saints or the Rams will be in it for sure.
Well, that's going out on a limb there, Brian.
You know.
All right, sir. Thanks so much. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks.
So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. If you must make fun of me, that's fine. Just as long as you use the hashtag salute to service. And we're asking you on our Facebook page, as well as on Twitter, about potentially seeing changes in the coaching ranks. Where are they needed? Where do you feel like they have to happen, whether it's now or whether it's end of the season?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Added to the highlight reel for rookie Nick Chubb. Holy cannoli. It was one heck of a moment. Started the third quarter and he bust free for 92 yards and a touchdown. The longest run in Browns history. Woo! And the longest play from scrimmage in the NFL this year. And so he finishes with 176 yards on 20 carries. And the Browns themselves go for over 200 yards rushing. Jim Donovan with that huge call on the Browns radio network. It was a nice victory for Cleveland at home against the Falcons. A perfect, and I do mean that literally, a perfect first half for Baker Mayfield after Greg Williams told him to, quote, cut it loose. All week in practice, they were telling Baker to cut it loose. And so in the first half, he was fantastic. He did not miss a pass. In fact, he completed, I think, his first 13 consecutive pass attempts. He was really good. And it was a lot of fun to see the potential of this offense. Now, it all has to work together. They have to be able to run the ball. He's got to be accurate. Yes, completed his first 13 passes of the game, the most consecutive completions to start a game this season. Also, the best mark for a Browns quarterback to start a game since at least 1991. So before that, they weren't keeping the numbers. This was the total package for the Browns offensively, and they also took advantage of some mistakes by the Falcons defense. And afterwards, we got a little bit of that sly confidence slash arrogance from the Browns rookie QB.
And when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous. I care to expand on that.
I just woke up feeling real dangerous.
Okay, Baker. That's a perfect quote. When I woke up this morning, I was feeling real dangerous. So he said he woke up that way. But it's nice when your coaching staff has been saying to you all week, cut it loose, cut it loose, cut it loose. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I mentioned that there were a bunch of milestones in a couple of different games. So you had the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes setting the single season record for touchdown passes, along with Larry Fitzgerald moving into second place on the NFL's all-time career receiving yardage list. So that was in one game. Then in the game between the Browns and the Falcons, I just told you about Nick Chubb, but how about Julio Jones? He becomes the fastest player in NFL history to reach 10,000 career receiving yards. So he does it in just 104 games. So milestones galore, both individual but also for teams. This is a big deal for the Browns because in this Greg Williams era, I'm using my air quotations, he's now 1-1. Whether or not they consider him for the full-time job or the head coaching job without the interim attached to it, that remains to be seen. But the team is playing really hard for him. Meanwhile, for the Atlanta Falcons, this is a major kick in the pants. I wasn't sure I was going to say major kick to the gut, but people don't generally kick other people in the gut. It was a major gut punch. How about that? Because they had a three-game winning streak. They had gotten back to 500, and then they take this humongous step backward in which they make the Browns' defense look like they're contending for a playoff spot.
And we certainly had made improvement over the last 3 weeks, and we didn't get the job done today, and certainly lost some of that consistency that we've been building towards. So for us, it was 100% time to we'll get back to it, watch it tomorrow, regroup.
This may have been a punch that they can't recover from, though. Because in the NFC South, the Saints continued their winning. I know the Panthers took a step back, but they're now two games behind the Saints in the South Division. The Falcons are now below 500. Now, here's the deal. When it comes to wild cards in the NFC and the AFC, you have a bunch of teams that have either four wins or five wins. You do have the Panthers in there with the six wins, and so they still have the nose in front for the top wild card. But right now, every team in the NFC is within a game of the leaders for the wild card. Sorry, every team that has four or five wins. We're not talking about the Giants. You can take the Bucks out of there. You can take the Cardinals and the Niners. But the teams that are still hanging around, they're close to 500. Those teams are all still in the wild card race. 855-212-4227. Chad is listening in Pennsylvania. Chad, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio. Chad. Roger is listening in Jackson, Mississippi. Roger, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to say you're the queen of sports. But look, I heard what you were talking about earlier about putting out a tweet. I'd just like to give my thanks and gratitude to the servicemen and women of this country that gives us the freedom to listen to sports and talk.
For sure, they do. I can't do what I do if they don't do what they do.
Well, that's why I say I like to give my thanks and gratitude out to the press and the retired veterans, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be where we're at now. Mm-hmm. And I am a Saints fan, so I'm glad to see them win, too.
Oh, yeah, they're the hottest team in football right now. They looked great against the Bengals.
Well, thank you, ma'am, and I appreciate it. Don't want to hold up the line. I'm sure you got other callers, but have a good morning.
All right. Thanks, Roger. Good to hear from you in Jackson, Mississippi. Something else that I remember about the Saints-Bengals game is it's the third consecutive week or the third consecutive game. I don't remember exactly when their bye was. Third consecutive game in which the Bengals have given up at least 500 yards offense to their opponent. Wowzers. So some of you are finding me on Twitter or on Facebook, and you're talking about organizations that could use a coaching change. And I saw one that looped in both Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati and John Harbaugh in Baltimore. This tweet, A-Law Radio, both have had a long tenure with the team. Lewis hasn't had any playoff wins. How long can a Super Bowl coach be mediocre? Super Bowl coach. Oh, referring to Harbaugh. Got it. And then he goes on to say, and Jason Garrett in Dallas, the win in Philly wasn't a job saver, just a Band-Aid for their wounds to reopen. See, I disagree with that. I feel like the jury is still out. If the Cowboys rally to make the playoffs, I kind of feel like Jason Garrett has earned more time on the job. You may not like it, but if you consider everything that they've had to deal with this season, the defense has been good, yes, for sure. But think about all the changes on the offensive side of the football and how much they've had to overcome. If they make the postseason and they're above 500, I feel like Jason Garrett earns a lot of the credit. He may not keep his job, but if you're going to blame him for the things that go wrong, you also have to give him credit when things go right. Let's talk to Ice, who's in Baltimore. Ice, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio. Welcome to the show. Okay. Wow. Steve is listening in Pittsburgh. Steve, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Morning, Amy. Hey, Amy. I started to notice, when you get your thoughts, it's starting to look like Tom Brady and Father Time are starting to tick. And the reason I say that is not only did he have a bad day, but it's seeming as of the last few games, even the ones that they've won, his reactionary time is seeming to slow some. When the rush is coming, where he used to be a little more elusive and a little more quick to get rid of the ball, he seems to be tucking the ball or ducking and taking sacks where he's not able to even when trouble starts to come, it looks like he just collapses and his throws.
What would you prefer him to do? What when the pressure's coming and he's about to get wrapped up, would you prefer him to chuck the ball into a scrum and get picked off, or would you prefer him to have the ball hanging out there so that he has a fumble? I mean, I feel like that's kind of the smartest thing to do when you know you're about to get sacked. How about don't turn the ball over at the same time?
Well, I mean, even when he tucks the ball and has to run, I mean, you even saw in that pass, he started stumbling. I mean, he looked very feeble.
I mean, Steve, stop it. He's not feeble, but he's not a runner. He's no more a runner than Peyton Manning was, or that Eli Manning is. He's not a running quarterback. It's why it's a big joke every time he comes up with a run and his mom says something about how he's the fastest guy on the field. He's not. His entire career, especially later in his career, but his entire career is based on not getting hit. I mean, that's what Tom Brady does. He gets rid of the football as quickly as possible, and he's a master at finding the easy option or the best option even when the pressure's coming. So everybody in the NFL knows the key to keeping Brady looking human, looking marginal, is to get to him. And Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans had a fantastic game plan. They were able to get to him. Not only did they sack him three times, but they put a lot of pressure on him, and I think he got hit a half dozen other times. And so they were able to stuff the run as well for the Pats. So yeah, I agree. He had a bad game, and it's easy to point to that and say it's because he's old, but I think it's just because the Titans made him look marginal, made him look human, and really took away his strengths. I mean, that's going to be what people say every single time Brady has a bad game. Certainly at 41 years old, he's not going to be running up and down the field, but he's never done that. Steve, thank you so much. Feeble and frail do not apply to Tom Brady. I mean, again, I agree with you that at 41, you know, it's easier to point to moments in a game where you think, oh my gosh, maybe it's time. Maybe it's maybe that's a product of his age, but that's too easy. It's too simple. This is a really bad game. The Titans deserve the credit. The Patriots are still 7-3. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.